AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprised with new topics every single weekend, jamming you with your daily dose of UFC. And we just had UFC Vancouver. We went 7-6 on predictions, which is not even close to our best, especially after going 11-1 at Rio. But nonetheless, a lot of stuff happened on the card, a lot of surprises. I feel like this card was trying to sabotage itself, and a lot of the fighters on here refused to let it be sabotaged, including the fans refused to give in. But we are going to be recapping everything, talking about what is next for all the fighters, who's entering title shot territory, who's on the cut counter, and who is now in a better spot in their UFC career. Also, going to be talking about week 7 of the NFL season, which is going down right now. We still have 2 more games on Monday night, but other than that, other games have taken place. It wasn't our best week on picks in that either, but yeah, that's it. All in today's episode, a little week 7, little UFC Vancouver, because work has been super stressful, guys. I kid you not, I need to pass my insurance exam if I want to even have a job at my company. You know, I've already moved down to Chicago, I've already made the transition, and I've already failed twice. And I need to pass this for a third time. By the time you're listening to this, I will have already taken it. So I suppose in the next episode, you'll know where I'm at. But it's just been all my life. All my life has been this last week has been just studying for this insurance exam. So I do need a little bit of a break here. And my break is going to be talking about week 7 of the NFL season and UFC Vancouver. So kicking off the week, we had an absolute battle on Thursday Night Football. I mean, utterly insane. Bengals at +800 beat the over -100 Steelers 33-31. I mean, who saw that coming? Who saw Joe Flacco and Aaron Rodgers turning back the clock for an absolute slugfest? With this, Steelers will still have control of the AFC North with a 4-2 record, but the Bengals will pick up their first win since starting 2-0. That's right, they are now 3-4, second in the AFC North. Here are the fantasy matchups. So, by the way, if you'd have had a team of Joe Flacco, Ja'Marr Chase, Pat Freiermuth, T. Higgins, Jalen Warren, which I think is a very possible team, you would have probably won your week just there. Pat Freiermuth, 28. Aaron Rodgers, even, 22. And Jalen Warren, 19.8 in PPR leagues. As for the Bengals, Ja'Marr Chase, 38.1, one of the best players of week number 7. Joe Flacco had 25.98, and T. Higgins had 21.6. These guys were scoring left, right, and center, but to be honest, it was the fourth quarter. Fourth quarter saw 3 touchdowns and 2 field goals in what was just a phenomenal, phenomenal game. Aaron Rodgers went for 249 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 2 picks. Jalen Warren rushed for 127 yards, and Pat Freiermuth, 5 catches, 111 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Jonnu Smith had a touchdown as well. So did Nate Washington. That's right. Of the 4 touchdowns thrown, they all went to tight ends. I was about to say wide receivers, but thankfully he wasn't passing wide receivers, as wide receiver 1 DK Metcalf held only 3 catches for 50 yards, which was good because I was playing him in fantasy. As for the Bengals, Joe Flacco in his second Bengals game, 342 yards, 3 touchdowns. Chase Brown goes for 108 yards, and Ja'Marr Chase, 16 catches, 161 yards, and a touchdown. Let's not forget about T. Higgins, 6 catches, 96 yards, and a touchdown. And if tight ends weren't enough for you, Noah Fant, that's right, Noah Fant is on the Bengals, 4 catches, 44 yards, and a touchdown. What a game. What a game. You know, these divisional matchups always show out, are always entertaining, and big things ahead for the Bengals now. I think they have this newfound surge, and for the Steelers, they're probably going to finish 9-8 like they always do. But it was a great Thursday Night Football game. Was I very locked in on it? No, as I was studying for an exam, which I am currently still studying for. With that, we got into Sunday football. We were in London as the Rams took on the Jaguars, and on my low predictions, I said, you know, the Rams, they always play, not the Rams, the Jaguars always play better overseas. You know, Trevor Lawrence, he's going to have a great game. Jaguars are going to have a great game. Yeah, they did not. 35-7. And we get a garbage time 34-yard touchdown from Travis Hunter with 9 minutes left in the game to avoid a shutout. But yeah, just rough showing all around for this Jaguars team. You know, Travis Hunter had 24 fantasy points. T-Law had 17, and Washington had 10.2. Washington also had some unfortunate plays, as you know, I feel like his team was letting him down with some penalties. As for the Jaguars, you get 27 from Stafford and 26 from Adams. Ridiculous. But yeah, Stafford goes for 182 yards, 5 touchdowns. Kyren Williams and Blake Corum splitting rushes at 12 apiece. I found that very interesting. I really do. I didn't realize Blake Corum was on the come up to take out Kyren Williams' job, but I guess he is. Receiving wise, Devontae Smith, 5 catches, 35 yards, 3 freaking touchdowns. You also had Mumfield, a rookie wide receiver, getting his first career touchdown, and Ferguson, not Jake Ferguson, but some type of Ferguson, Terrence, I think it is, catching a touchdown pass as well. As for the Jags, Lawrence, 296 yards and a touchdown. They just couldn't find the end zone. I think they failed on either like 3 or 4 fourth down attempts. Like, that was the real kicker for them. ETN only held the 44 yards. Shouldn't have gotten rid of Tank Bigsby. That's all I'm going to say. And definitely the stud for the Jags here was Travis Hunter. 8 catches, 101 yards, and a touchdown. Good job for him. B-Tom gets 6.1 fantasy points on 3 catches and unfortunately is probably hurt. So Jags 4-3 are on a 2-game skid and are in firm second place in the AFC South. As for the Rams, hello. This Rams team these last few weeks has been really good. 2 straight wins. They're 5-2, second in the NFC West. They are a team to look out for. Next up, Chiefs and Raiders. If you want good divisional games, this was not one of them. Chiefs win 31-0, bringing their points forward to 186 points against 124. Raiders go to 2-5 with a minus 73 point differential. Yeah. Yeah, it was a rough one. Trey Tucker, 8 points. Ashton Jeanty, 4. Gene Bach, 3.3. Yeah. Ashton Jeanty, my boy, literally had nothing going for him. Absolutely not. 6 rushes, 21 yards. They went 3 and out so many times. It was ridiculous. They even benched Geno Smith. Kenny Pickett came in. He couldn't even do anything. I mean, it was just a rough game. Really rough game. No Bowers, though. No Jacoby Meyer. And I guess it showed. But Chiefs were on one. That's all I'm going to say. Mahomes, 26 points. Rashee Rice, return game, 23. You even had B. Smith. I don't even know who that is. Legit, no idea who B. Smith is. Who is B. Smith, and how did he get fantasy points? Who is this guy? Oh, my gosh, it's Brown. They do not. Well, it says B. Smith. Who is B. Smith? Who is B. Smith who had 13 fantasy points? I legit can't find this guy on the depth chart. Who is this Smith guy? Running back. 5 catches, 42 yards. Who is this guy? 14 rushes, 3 yards. Who is B. Smith? Bobby Smith? Bobby Smith, who are you? I have no idea. I'm actually so perplexed by this. Kareem Hunt, I guess, was RB3 for the game, and Pacheco got a touchdown. So good for him. Rashee Rice, 7 catches, 42 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He's wide receiver 1. He's back. He's a beauty. Chiefs are in a, you know, good spot. Good spot. They're on a roll, is what I was trying to say. 4-3. Still third in the AFC West, but on a 2-game streak here. They're climbing back. Raiders, bottom of the AFC West, 2-5. They are a very bad and mismanaged team. Keep Pete Carroll. I don't know why you signed to join the Raiders. Money talks, but your play calls definitely don't. Next up, blowout here for the Browns. 31-6 over the Dolphins. Didn't see this coming. I didn't. I have some newfound respect for the Browns here. Great win as they improved to 2-2 at home. 2-5 record for them. As for the Dolphins, 1-6, 3-game losing streak. They are one of, if not the worst teams in the league. They're bad. They're really bad. A-Chain, 12.8 points. He has no team. My poor Devin A-Chain has no team. Now, if he had a team, he'd be an absolute killer, but sadly, no one's out here helping Devin A-Chain out. For the Browns, Quashawn Judkins, 26 fantasy points. This guy is going to have a great career, and the Cleveland defense gets 24. It's basically Judkins of the defense killing it all day. You had a 34-yard pick 6 from Tyson Campbell in the third quarter, which really gave them all of their points. They also picked off Tua 3 times, and guess who came in? Quinn Ewers. Quinn Ewers went 5 of 8 for 53 yards. Tua Tagovailoa should just retire. It's a shame what concussions have done to him, but his time is here. You know, it's time for him to go. A-Chain, 82 yards on the ground, had 3 catches. That was just about it. I also forgot Westbrook Akini is on this team. Westbrook Akini on the Titans last season used to come in and just get me like a casual 17 or 18 game on like one big like 82 or 90 yard touchdown. I freaking miss you, Westbrook Akini. As for the Browns, I mean, Dylan Gabriel, 116 yards. You know, I kind of want to see Shador. I can't lie. You know, Dylan isn't playing bad. He's just not doing anything. So I would really like to see a bit of that Shador Sanders. Quashawn Judkins, 25 rushes, 84 yards, 3 touchdowns. You know, this dude is a tank. He really is. Got one from the 2-yard line, from the 3-yard line, and had a big 46-yard run. He is one of the next future great backs. As for receiving-wise, you know, when you only quarterback only throws the ball 18 times for 116 yards, you don't get much going around. Jerry Jeudy, I feel bad if you start him in fantasy. I legit have never had him in fantasy. 2 catches, 17 yards. Fannin Jr., the tight end, he gets 36 yards on 4 catches. That's all I can say for him. Browns, 2-5. Dolphins, 1-6. Yeah, glad I'm not a Dolphins fan. Sorry, Zeke, who we've had on the pod before. He is a Dolphins fan. Next up on our noon slate, Patriots beat the Titans 31-13. Now, it started good. First quarter, 10-3. Then, at one point, it was 13-10. And then the Titans didn't score again and gave up 3 straight touchdowns. So, yeah, Drake May, 23 fantasy points. The Patriots defense, 20. And Ramondre Stevenson, 16.8. He has taken over the backfield from Trey Henderson. As for the Titans, C. Dyke, I have no idea who you are. I'm so sorry. Chimere Dyke. Wow. Chimere Dyke, you had 16.9 fantasy points. Tony Pollard had 12. And Cam Ward, 10.2 and got a touchdown. Good for him. Good for you, Cam Ward. As for the Patriots, Joshua Dobbs is their backup. He came in for a play. Fun fact, 12-yard pass. Good for him. 222 yards on only 2 incompletions for 2 touchdowns. A lot of 2s for Drake May in this game. Ramondre, 88 yards, a touchdown. He was playing good. And Stephon Diggs, who I thought was going to be out, 7 catches, 69 yards, scored more than another wide receiver I had in. So shame on me for starting him. As for Tennessee, Cam Ward, 255 yards, touchdown at pick. He threw 255 yards. Let's give him some respect. Now, Tajay Spears actually outrushed Tony Pollard, so I definitely think Tony Pollard may be hitting the back burner, but he did catch 6 balls for 43 yards. That's where all his points came from. And yeah, Chimere Dyke, it's like D-I-K-E, so I don't know how you pronounce it. 4 catches, 7 yards at Tutty. I guess he's wide receiver. What? I have no idea. Titans are abysmal. They really are. They have more potential than the Dolphins and Jets, though. I'm gonna be honest. They're 1-6, only 96.4 on the year. I mean, they really are the worst offense in the league. But they do have a win, you know, and not every team can say that, as we will learn in a second. As for the Patriots, they're 5-2, 4 straight games. Suck on that, Belichick. They are over the Bills in the AFC East rankings. Crazy stuff for the Patriots. And as I look, they're actually tied for 2nd in the AFC. That's awesome. Next up, Panthers win 13-6. I thought this was Fields' time. I really did. I really thought this would be the game, but no. Jets fall to 0-7. 0-5 at home, 0-2 on the road. Can't win a game. As for the Panthers, 4-3. The Panthers have a positive record, and they have won 3 straight games. Xavier Leggett, 24 fantasy. Panthers defense had 16. And Rico Dowdle, a little off game with only 10, oddly enough. As for the Jets, Theo Johnson, Tyler Johnson. I have no idea who it is. It might be Tyler Johnson, wide receiver, 3 catches, 60 yards. That was it. Dude, that was freaking abysmal. Really abysmal. Funny enough, Justin Fields is actually benched. I don't know if he got hurt or something, but Tyrod Taylor came in and threw 2 picks and literally did nothing. Breece Hall, 38 yards. Garrett Wilson, I don't even know if he played. The Jets are awful. That's all you need to know. There's literally nothing to talk about. Now, tell you what you do have to talk about, unfortunately, and that's the Bears winning, and the Bears are now ahead of the Vikings. They're 4-2. How have the Bears won 4 straight? Who let the Bears win 4 straight games? I don't know, but they're 4-2 and ahead of the Vikings, I guess. Saints lose 26-14. They're now 1-6 and are, yeah, the worst team in the NFC and actually one of the worst teams in the freaking league. Yeah, Saints rough showing. They have a minus 61 point differential. Oof-da. And can't win a game to save their lives on the road. Fantasy-wise, you know, DeAndre Swift, 20 fantasy points. Mongal, the other running back, 17. The Bears D had 15. Olave, the real breakout player for this game, with 26 fantasy points. And Juwan Johnson had 12.9. Yeah, you know, this game was somewhat close. It was 20-14, and then really the Saints defense could do a single thing. I mean, a field goal in the third and a field goal in the fourth for the Bears sealed the deal. For New Orleans, Spencer Rattler, 233 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 3 picks. Yikes. He likes throwing 2 cornerbacks on the other team. Kamara is held to 28 yards as Keandre Miller only gets 1 carry with the ball. Olave, 5 catches, 98 yards, and 2 touchdowns, was a STUD, a stud. For the Bears, Caleb Williams, 172 yards and a pick. Really rough game for him. Only 4 fantasy points. As for the DeAndre Swift's player of the game, 124 yards and a touchdown, was playing well. And yeah, Malangi, 13 rushes, 81 yards, a touchdown. Good for him. And my boy DJ Moore, 3 catches, 43 yards. I mean, he just wasn't being passed to. And there's nothing to do in that instance. So good job to the Bears. I'll give you your credit, even though you freaking are ahead of us in the rankings. Which brings me to the Vikings, who are 28 to 22 points less. They lost. That was the score they lost.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Too bad the Eagles. I was going to do something funny, but I have nothing funny to say here about this. 3-3 with a plus 20-point differential, and we're last. We're freaking last. How? How are we last? It makes literally no sense. No sense at all. Eagles are 5-2, but they are not a good 5-2. This Eagles team is not better than last year. Devontae Smith, 33 fantasy points on my fantasy bench. Luckily, I still won 75-66. Thank goodness. A.J. Brown, 28, and Jalen Hurts, 24. It was a passing day for the Eagles. Jordan Addison, who I did start, 21 fantasy points. The kicker, Will Reichard, 18, and J.J., 12.9. Scoring-wise, I mean, it was just, you know, unable to get into the end zone. We really were. Vikings get one touchdown. They have one called back. It just wasn't the Vikings' day at the, you know, once the bell rang. Hurts, only 4 incompletions, 326 yards and 3 touchdowns. Absolutely torched the Vikings' defense. Only had 2 points. Yikes. Saquon, though, we held him on 18 carries of 44 yards. We are a stud at that. But, yeah, Devontae Smith, 9 catches, 183 yards, tutty. A.J. Brown, 4 catches, 120 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Yeah, they were cooking us. For Minnesota, Carson Wentz, 313 yards, 2 picks. Uh-oh. Max Brosmer, is that you? Ready to come in? Jordan Mason, 15 rushes, 57 yards, and a touchdown. Good for him. Jordan Addison, 9 catches, 128 yards. Hawkinson, 6 catches, 43 yards. And Justin Jefferson, 5 catches, 79 yards. But fear not, for we will be taking on the Chargers this upcoming Thursday on Thursday Night Football. And what? What's the next team we're talking about? That is right, the Chargers, who lose to the Colts. The Colts are the best team in the NFL currently. Well, unless the Buccaneers win tonight, which they might. Them and the Lions, it's currently 7-0 Lions in the second quarter. But yeah, Colts win 38-24. This team is insane. 232 points for us. The best offense in the league. What? I know what. The Colts, the 6-1 Colts on a 3-game win streak, they are just playing amazing. Jonathan Taylor, 34 fantasy points. He is the best running back in the game. Daniel Jones, 22. And Michael Pittman, that little 20 bomb. For the Chargers, I have no idea who this guy is. No idea, but Oronde Greshin II had a coming out game with 29 fantasy points. Keenan Allen had 28. Justin Herbert had 27.9. And my boy Quentin Johnson legit had like 11.2. He got a touchdown, though. No, that's a positive. But yeah, I mean, when you give up 3 first-half touchdowns, 2 third-quarter touchdowns, you'll get behind. The Chargers just couldn't catch up at the end of the day. Daniel Jones, 288 yards and 2 touchdowns, was a stud. JT, 94 yards, 3 touchdowns. Someone stop this guy. Really, this guy's insane. And the best rookie tight end of the year, Tyler Warren, 4 catches, 69 yards, a touchdown. I missed on in fantasy. Son of a gun, I'm having a rough year in fantasy, despite actually having a pretty decent week this week. As for the Chargers, Justin Herbert, 420 yards. The most passing yards, I believe, this season for a quarterback. 3 touchdowns, 2 picks, though. He also ran for 31 yards. Outran Vidal, who had 9 carries for 20 yards. Greshin II, who's apparently a tight end. Like, this guy's insane. 7 catches, 164 yards, 1 touchdown. Keenan Allen, 11 catches, 119 yards at tutty. Ladd McConkey, 9 catches, 67 yards. Quentin Johnson, 2 catches, 30 yards. But did get a touchdown. So we'll give him some props there. But yeah, Colts improved to 6-1. They are looking deadly to start the year. That's all I got to say about that. With that, we got into our 3:30 games. Had a couple good ones. They really did. Broncos and Giants. Broncos narrowly avoid Cameron Scadabo and Jackson Dart. I mean, holy cow. Right at the buzzer. right at the buzzer, and you can all blame the Giants kicker for that. Whoever he is, he missed an extra point, which would have led this to going to overtime, but no, he missed, and Will Lutz seals the deal. Broncos will improve to 5-2, four-game winning streak, best team in the AFC West. They look killer this season, and as for the Giants, they sadly fall to 2-5, but they are way better than that 2-5 record. Unfortunately, 0-4 on the road. It's been the road games that have been hurting them. Jackson Dart, 28 fantasy points. Cam Scottavo, 18. Daniel Bellinger, 17.8 for the tight end. As for the Broncos, the best quarterback performance of the week, 39.96 for Bo Nix. This kid is ridiculous. Cortland Sutton, 16. Marvin Mims Jr., 15. But yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about one of the greatest fourth quarters ever, we saw not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, but six touchdowns scored in a 14-minute span, and you see a game-winning field goal. You just can't write that any better. Jackson Dart is quickly becoming a legend, 283 yards and three touchdowns on below 50% completion. Wow. Cam Scottavo gets 60 yards on the ground, but it's actually Tracy Jr. and Jackson Dart who run in touchdowns. Wandale Robinson, six catches, 95 yards, does all right, but Bellinger, Theo Johnson, Cam Scottavo each catch touchdowns from Jackson Dart. For the Broncos, Bo Nix, 279 yards, two touchdowns, 27 for 50 on completions. He also had 48 yards on the ground with two tutties. J.K. Dobbins gets 81 yards. And yeah, everyone was, Sutton was catching balls, Evan Ingram, Marvin Mims, Torrey Franklin. I mean, everyone was catching passes. But great win for the Broncos. This was probably the best game of the week, in my opinion. And yeah, I'm excited to watch Bo Nix and Jackson Dart have themselves some good NFL careers. Next up, Packers and Cardinals. And Jacoby Brissett had such a good game. Shout out 19.76 fantasy points from Jacoby Brissett. He played his heart out. But man, Cardinals just suck. 2-5. Five straight losses. They just are abysmal. Trey McBride, though, is not. 29 fantasy points. He had himself a great game. Even the kicker, Ryland, had 12. And for the Packers, you know, it wasn't anything crazy. 18 for Josh Jacobs, 16 for Kraft, only 13 for Jordan Love, thankfully, as the Packers moved to 4-1-1. They're the best team in the FC North. Can you believe that? Can you believe they're the best team? I can't believe they're the best team. That makes absolutely no sense. But yeah. Overall, it was really close up until the end. Unfortunately, you know, Packers score with under 2 minutes left, and then the Cardinals can't do anything. You really thought the Cardinals were going to rally there at the end? Absolutely not. Jordan Love, 179 yards, a touchdown, held in check. Jacobs punches in two tutties, and Romeo Doubs, six catches, 72 yards. Tucker Kraft, five catches, 58 yards, a tutty, with the two studs out on the field. For the Cardinals, Jacoby Brissett, 279 yards, two touchdowns. Very impressed with him. Bam Knight, 57 yards rushing. And Trey McBride, 10 catches, 74 yards, two touchdowns. I mean, just pure excellence. Pure excellence from Trey McBride. He is the best tight end in the game right now. Him and Jake Ferguson and Tyler Warren, you know, all kind of fighting for that number one spot in the NFL. Moving along, we got two more games to talk about. Final 3:30 game, Cowboys and Commanders. Holy cow, Brandon Aubrey, you goat, getting me a bunch of fantasy points, but it's Dak Prescott and Jake Ferguson. You know, even CeeDee Lamb, his return game, looking like a stud, 44-22, doubling the score of the Commanders. Cowboys improved to 3-3-1 and are second in the NFC East. As for the Commanders, 3-4, two-game skid, they are third in the NFC East. NFC East has a lot of potential, though. I can really feel it this season for the NFC East. All the teams in there are just playing some great ball. Jaden Daniels, 17 fantasy points, might have hurt himself. Jackson Kroski-Merritt held to only 4 fantasy points. It was a rough showing. It really was. And, you know, they just fell behind, and the running game wasn't working. The throwing game wasn't really going either. Jaden Daniels gets hurt. In comes Mariota. He can't do anything. There's just really no highlights for this team. Jaden Daniels ran in a touchdown, and Chris Rodriguez Jr. ran in a touchdown. Oh, and Zach Ertz, he caught a touchdown. Good for that boy. As for the Cowboys, Dak, 264 yards and three touchdowns. This is the Cowboys team that Cowboys fans have dreamed about. Javonte Williams, 116 yards for a tutty. He had a great game. And CeeDee Lamb, five catches, 110 yards, and a touchdown. Yeah, Jake Ferguson, two touchdowns. I can't believe how good Jake Ferguson is. I am ashamed I didn't find him this season. I really need to work on my scouting for next year. But yeah, Cowboys, second in the NFC East, and the Commanders are in third. So these two are probably going to flip-flop throughout the whole season, trying to catch up to the Eagles. And with that, we got into Sunday Night Football, 49ers and Falcons, and just wow. Just wow is all I'm going to say, as the 49ers improved to 5-2, as Christian McCaffrey, 39 fantasy points. He's unreal. this is the Christian McCaffrey I was thinking could maybe be around this season. And yeah, he clearly is. Bijan had 21, and the whole game, the announcers are saying Bijan is the number one player in the NFL, and you know Christian McCaffrey's out here like, no, it's literally me. This was literally McCaffrey versus Bijan, and McCaffrey thrived here. 129 yards on 24 rushes for 2 touchdowns, 7 catches, 72 yards. He's insane. He really is. Mac Jones, 152 yards and a touchdown, a pick. Couldn't get anything going. And Juwan Jennings only having 4 catches for 31 yards. And George Kittle, multiple targets, no catches. For the Falcons, they can't follow up the great Bills win as Penix goes 21 for 38 for 241 yards and a touchdown. Bijan held the 40 yards on the ground. He made it all up through the air. 6 catches, 50 yards, a touchdown, but pretty notable that he couldn't get it done on the ground. This 49ers team looking good, really. 5-2, best team in the NFC West. I sense good things with them. I really do. I can feel good things for the 49ers this upcoming season. And as for the Falcons, you know, 3-3, them and the Panthers are probably going to battle for that number two spot in the NFC South. But as we start to see these teams shape up, 7 weeks in, your top 7 teams in the NFC East are going to be your Eagles, your Packers, your Lions, your Bears, your Buccaneers, and your 49ers. Actually, wait. Oh, here's the thing. We actually got to give it a bit. We really do. We have a lot of 4-2 teams, 4-3. Then we got a couple 5-2 teams. So we're going to let it simmer. But I can tell you teams that are not going to do well this season. Cardinals 2-5. Absolutely not. Saints 1-6. Absolutely not. Giants 2-5. You know, what was the Giants schedule, though, before I let you all go, for the NFL? You know, Eagles, 49ers, Bears, Packers, Lions, Patriots, Commanders, Vikings, Raiders. Oh, Cowboys, that's a tough schedule. Oh, my gosh, Jackson Dart is a savage. Wow, taking this team all the way. Maybe he will, but yeah, that's your little NFL Week 7 recap. I don't even know when I'm going to have time to write my fantasy blog. You know, especially if I don't pass tomorrow, which I am going to pass my exam tomorrow. I will pass my insurance exam. Third time's the charm. I don't even want to think about failure because we don't think about negative things. We only think about positive things here on the channel. Channel Free Will Podcast, whatever you want to call it. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, it's a pretty short and sweet episode, right to the point. And we got to talk about UFC Vancouver because a lot of unexpected things happened. There were some things I maybe should have seen, but overall, there were a couple upsets, a couple underdogs here and there, and the main event, I think, left everyone shocked and a little bit, you know, just not even like jaws drop, but just kind of like, am I actually witnessing this? And yes, you were witnessing it. So without further ado, here's your official UFC Vancouver review for each and every fight. He opened the night with a little women's bantamweight action, and it started off, you know, a bit sloppy, but by the end of the third round, Melissa Croden was actually TKOing Tanara Lisboa in, and Melissa Croden, welcome to the UFC women's bantamweight division. You have yourself someone to watch out for as she gets the round 3 TKO over Tanara Lisboa. 99 significant strikes to 42, 148 total strikes to 63. I mean, this was just domination from Melissa Croden. Debuting here, looked great, won a close round 1, round 2 dominated, knocked her down, 33 significant strikes to 13, and then round 3 came around, just took her down repeatedly, 39 significant strikes to 4. And gets the round 3 ground and pound TKO. And Melissa Croden is now 7-2 with a 100% finish rate. Very cool. Very nice. And yeah, I got it done with 28 seconds left. Don't get much better than that. As for Tanara Lisboa, she is now on a 2-fight losing streak. She has been finished in her last 2 fights and hasn't won since October 2023. I don't really know what's left for her in the UFC. I feel like they'll give her one more fight. That's just like the vibe I'm getting. But like, I mean, there just isn't much, like, options I could even say. Maybe I have no one. I think that maybe wraps for Tanara Lisboa in the UFC. And as for Melissa Croden, this is just the beginning. This really is. I'm always someone with the women's bantamweight division. It's a division you can break into right off the bat. You can just easily get in. It is not hard. And, you know, the last person to beat, Tara Lisboa, was Luiana Santos. Fun fact, Luiana Santos is ranked at number 15 in the women's bantamweight division. That fight just writes itself. So Luiana Santos versus Melissa Croden, I think, should be next. And I also think that Tara Lisboa should, unfortunately, head on over to the independent scene. Dare I say, maybe retire. Next up, middleweight division. And by the way, we had a very, very interesting card. We had five round three finishes. I've almost never seen that. In my time in the UFC, you rarely see that many round three finishes on a card. And we got one here. Yuzuri Belgori TKOs Osmat Bekov in round number three. Just shocking. Really shocking. The theme of the night was just weirdness. It really was. In round one, Yuzuri's just outpacing Osmat. Osmat kind of stamina dumped in round one, started just going for takedowns, went 3 of 5, and then by the time round two came around, had no stamina. Now, mind you, he was firing back big shots, but Yuzuri just had way more output. I mean, 102 significant strikes to 24 and defends 50% of Osmat's takedowns, only getting taken down for a total of 3 minutes of control time. Yeah, Bekov, I thought he was much better than this. You know, here's a guy who had came into the UFC in 2025, gotten two massive round one knockouts, and here just showed that he might just be a round one guy, and after that, nothing else. But Yuzuri Belgori, a guy who had lost on the Contender Series, come back and, you know, win on the Contender Series, and then to debut end of this year, finally get a fight in. And by the way, short notice, I mean, good for Yuzuri Belgori. Can't even hate. And middleweight, you now have a 6'5" former kickboxer who I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, holds a win over Alex Pereira in kickboxing.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Funny enough, so Belgori make it two or three straight wins by finish, I think it is. And yeah, I'm interested to see what he does in the middleweight division. As for Osmat, back to the drawing board. I would still like to see. He was supposed to take on Torres Finney. I would like to see Torres Finney versus Osmat Bekov still. It's such a meme fight. But for Belgori, you know, it's tricky. Middleweight's a tricky division to maneuver. We're going to get into another middleweight matchup in a second here. And I almost think that's what I want to do next for Yuzuri Belgori in terms of who he should fight next. And the winner of the middleweight matchup we're going to talk about in a second. But we have another women's fight to talk about as Stephanie Luciana gets the round three rear naked choke over Ravina Oliveira. Great win for Luciano. I mean, I knew she'd get done. I even predicted submission. I thought she'd submit her in round one, but hey, round three, we will take it. Only 25 years of age. Don't get much better than that. Currently sitting at 2-1 in the UFC, only decision loss, Sam Hughes split, so not too shabby. 7-2 record, and just got massive submission over Ravina Oliveira. And I mean, this wasn't really close. Round one, pieced her up on the feet. Round two, took her down. I mean, the output, Ravina Oliveira only landed 9 significant strikes in round two. And then round three, took her down in 2 minutes and 50 seconds, got the rear naked choke. Really good back-taking, too, from Stephanie Luciana. Very impressive. For Ravina Oliveira, I don't want to say this is it, but 0-2, hasn't won since 2023. Yeah, we're cutting her, too. Unless we want to run Ravina Oliveira and Tara Lisboa, which, funny enough, Tara Lisboa holds a win over Ravina Oliveira, and that was the last time Tara Lisboa has won. So I think both of those women should go have a little rematch outside of the UFC, unless they want a rematch in the UFC, but I severely doubt it. Yeah, Ravina Oliveira is being added to the cut counter with Tara Lisboa. As for Luciano, you know, women's strawweight division, not going to get you right into a ranked opponent here, but this is going to get you pretty freaking close if you ask me. And, you know, I think it's just a matter of who You know, there's a lot of options, but there's this girl named Fatima Klein. She's 8-1. Nickname is the Archangel. She had two fights this year, both of them great knockouts. Only losses, Jasmine Jess DeVicious, and she's taking on Angela Hill. If she loses to Angela Hill, I think her versus Luiana Santos would be a perfect fight. Or Stephanie Luciano, my bad. So Stephanie Luciano versus Fatima Klein, if she loses, maybe Angela Hill. You know, I'll throw that out there, but Angela Hill is ranked at number 12. So we're going to have to see. We could also do Loma Luke Boonmi. She recently lost to Alex Thanera. So Loma Luke Boonmi, I also like. Options are abound for Stephanie Luciano. Next up, middleweight division, DeJordan Santos defeats Danny Barlow. And this was Danny Barlow's fight to lose. You know, he wins round one pretty close. And round two is the swing round. Now, round two, I had for Danny. So I had Danny winning this. Round three was a DeJordan round. Round one was a Danny round. All came down to round two. Apparently, some judges scored round one for DeJordan Santos, which made no sense. Obvious Danny Barlow round. And then round two, I mean, it could have gone either way. I had it going to Danny. I thought he was putting on more pace. He had more options to finish DeJordan. But at the end of the day, I mean, it was a back and forth affair. 29-28 on all three judges' scorecards. And yeah, DeJordan Santos walks away victorious. First win since his Contender Series win in September of 2024. Goes 1-1 in the year 2025. And like I said, I think him versus Yuri Belgori is a perfect matchup. And, you know, 6 foot versus 6 foot five, it's going to be hard to find Yuri Belgori tall guys, but they're both in similar spots. Both have one UFC win. Both came from the Contender Series. You know, I think that's a good fight to make right there, especially with how limited DeJordan Santos' options will be, and I don't really see him going far. So if we could just kind of determine between Usry and DeJordan who is better, that would be wonderful. As for Danny Barlow, you know, it's not even that he gassed out. I just think, like, he just, like, didn't have a game plan heading into round three. After starting out 9-0, he since went 0-2 in 2025, lost to Sam Parrison in March, now lost to DeJordan Santos here, 99-7 strikes to 93, so he did get outstruck at the end of the day, but I don't know. There will be options for him to bounce back. I mean, we could always have him fight Azamat Bekov. You know, there's going to be options out there, but Ryan Loader is taking on Ismael Nurmagomedov, and whoever loses that will be on a two-fight losing streak. So I think the loser of Ryan Loader and Ismael Nurmagomedov versus Danny Barlow will be a good matchup if that is the one you would want to go with. But he looks pretty good at middleweight. I just think he needs to work on his round three game plan. But, you know, this fight was decent. It wasn't anything special. No need to rewatch. Just, you know, leave it be. Next up, round three finish. Bruno Silva over Hyung Sung Park. This one breaks my heart because I love Hyung Sung Park, and clearly Hyung Sung Park was not ready for the UFC rankings. As the 14th ranked, Bruno Silva gets yet another finish in his career, submitting him in round number three. And, you know, from the get-go, competitive, really competitive. Bruno Silva had his number on the feet in round one, 20 significant strikes to 10. Each man landed a takedown. You know, Hyung Sung really tried a lot here. He went 5 of 9 on the fight. Couldn't even get 5 minutes of control time, which wasn't good. And to be fair, he was looking decent in round three, but he did get dropped in round two. I'm surprised he was able to eat that punch that he took, but managed to get back up. And then round three, unfortunately, you know, just didn't go his way. It was even on the feet, but then Bruno Silva would bring it to the ground, eventually wind up on the back and lock up the rear naked choke. So Bruno Silva, big win for him. Big win. First win since July 2024. But in terms of guys who are super fun and super action-packed to watch, Bruno Silva hasn't gone the distance since October 2020. We are approaching the 6th year of his not going the distance. And by the way, his last three fights have ended in round number three. So it's always unexpected with Bruno Silva. And especially at 35 years of age, I mean, he's going to be 36 in March, probably around the next time he'll fight. I think now's the time if you want to, you know, get it going. By the way, his only losses, number one ranked Joshua Van, number 7th ranked Manel Cape. So what's next for Bruno Silva? Someone in the mix. Really someone in the mix, you know. He lost to Tigerlan Bekov back in 2020. Other than that, he holds no other ranked wins. So with Tagir being ranked at number 12, Charles Johnson is right ahead of him at 13. And Charles Johnson and Bruno Silva are gatekeepers. I say we reward them and have those two fights. Seems like the logical thing to do, if you ask me. So Bruno Silva versus Charles Johnson, we can run that any day of the week. But yeah, great finish for Bruno Silva, knocking him down, taking him down, and, you know, submitting him. great work. For Youngstown Park, after starting 10-0, similar to Nate Barlow, having a rough 2025, you know, started off with a 2-minute, 26-second submission of Carlos Hernandez, but then, you know, lost to Tetsuya Taira, lost to Bruno Silva. But let's look at it at this. He holds a loss to the number 5 and probably soon to be 13 guy in the rankings. I don't think we should cut him too much slack. So Youngstown Park can take on some unranked people, and there's actually someone who recently went on a little skid here, Clayton Carpenter. Clayton Carpenter is also in desperate need of a win. They're both young guys. Youngstown Park, Clayton Carpenter, run it in early 2025. Get those guys back on the winning track. Good work to Bruno Silva in this contest. Next up, oh my gosh, I love this one. Now, I don't know why I don't like Cody Gibson. I don't really have a reason. Maybe I just find him boring. Maybe I never thought he was UFC caliber. But watching, I think it's Al Gorquin, his name. The man from Mongolia, the murderer, as you will, gets a 21-second knockout. Great win for Alquin. Is it Aleng? Is that Alrenge? Oh, it might be Alrenge. I don't know. But anyways, Alrenge, Al Gorquin, whatever I call him. He has one name. All right. The man from Mongolia. Performance bonus, 21-second knockout. I mean, literally just hits Cody Gomson with a beautiful straight. The name of the game for these round one knockouts was the, you know, in this, on this card, was the straight, and it landed beautifully on Cody Gibson's chin. Barely even needed a couple follow-up punches. I kid you not, of the 5 significant strikes he landed, I think 3 or 4 were the follow-up punches. Like, he landed one punch, down goes Cody Gibson. Wild, absolutely wild. And Cody Gibson had only been finished, like, I think, a couple times in his career. Hadn't been a lot. 2025, he's now been finished twice. So Cody Gibson finished twice in 2025, just got knocked out in 21 seconds, and especially being almost 40 years old at bantamweight, he is going to join us on the cut counter, and I think his time in the UFC has come to an end. I mean, literally, the next thing you could do for Cody Gibson would be have someone from the Contender Series fight him. Other than that, there's just not much for him to do in the UFC. As for Al Gorquin, you know, first win since October 2023. The guy's had a pretty crazy UFC career with 4 wins, 3 losses, and a no contest. I don't know what to do with him at bantamweight, if I'm being honest. Bantamweight has unlimited options, so I think it's just shopping around who's available. You know, he's 32 years old. Going to be at that point where he needs to start picking up wins. But Daniel Marcos is taking on Felipe Lima coming up at UFC Qatar. Whoever loses that will be on a little losing streak, and especially if it's Daniel Marcos. Those two fought in 2024, and it was a no contest. So if we wanted to run that back, I think that could be a fun fight. So Al Gorquin versus the loser of Felipe Lima and Daniel Marcos. I even think whoever loses that, despite being on a 2-fight losing streak, is on the same level as Al Quang. However you say his name, he's from Mongolia, and he got a 21-second knockout. Next up, I would consider from here on up where things just get weird on this card. Things just get a little weird from here. You can just kind of feel with this Vancouver card that weird things were in the air. And Drew Dober, Kyle Prepolic is going down. Pretty standard. Pretty standard. Drew Dober outstrikes him 28-17 in round one. Drew Dober eating some big head kicks from Kyle. Drew, of course, landing more, cutting up Kyle. Round two comes around. Drew Dober outstrikes him 35-27. Both men fail a takedown, like barely even try. And it seems like Drew Dober is up heading to round three, but it's pretty close. We then get round three going, and Kyle Prepolic gets hit in the nuts. And it's bad. And he's down, and he's recovering, and the fight we thought was maybe gonna be stopped. I mean, this would be a recurring thing on the card with fights almost being stopped, but, you know, Drew Dober just, it looked like, you know, this fight was going to stop, but Kyle says, I'm going to continue. Drew Dober does the peace sign, you know, gives him a high five. It's basically like, I'm so sorry, man, and then proceeds to unload on him. 20 significant strikes to 7, utterly TKOs him on the feet. I mean, it was kind of just like, Drew Dober's like, oh, you just lost a point. That's what it was. They'd taken a point from Drew Dober, and Drew Dober was like, well, sheesh, I don't want this to be a draw. It just unloads on Kyle Prepolic. So Drew Dober, back in the knockout realm since October 2023, snaps his 3-fight losing streak and gets a big win here in Vancouver. Good work for Drew. I mean, lightweight division is so goofy. Like, you legit never know what to expect of these guys. And the fact that he had just lost a point and then he got like 30, 40 seconds after TKOs him, it made it pretty entertaining. For Kyle Prepolic, he has now gone 0-4, actually, in the UFC. 0-2 in 2025 and had an 0-2 stint in 2019, there's not much for me with Kyle Prapalik. I'm pretty confident cutting him with an 18-10 record. You know, he stepped down short notice against Benoit Saint-Denis in May. We can now thank him for, you know, giving us one more shot against Drew Dober. But yeah, he can join our boys, or actually our ladies, Ravina Oliveira and Tanira Lisboa, as being cut from the UFC, in my opinion. As for Dober, I think we found his next opponent in the next contest as Kyle Nelson defeats Matt Frivola, and we were robbed of a Kyle Nelson finish. Now, I didn't pick Kyle Nelson to win. I thought Matt Frivola was much better than he showed up to be, but round one, Kyle drops him. Okay, Frivola landed a takedown. They get back up. Kyle Nelson and him are striking. Kyle Nelson drops him. Starts landing some ground and pound with under 10 seconds left. With 3 seconds left, Dan Mergliotta breaks up the fight. He breaks up the fight. Kyle Nelson's going to celebrate. You know, what's his face? No protest from Matt Frivola. He's just kind of like, dang, I just got TKO'd. The crowd's cheering. We then realize that apparently when you stop the fight and there's 3 seconds left, we can actually continue the fight. And for some reason, Dan Mergliotta, there's no logic to explain this. He stopped the fight with 3 seconds left. Like, he broke them apart, and it was basically like, well, the round just ended anyway, so we might as well just keep fighting. And Kyle Nelson proceeded to, you know, outstrike him 29-21 in round two. Round three comes around, goes 2-4 in takedowns, does get taken down, and even Matt Frivola reversed a takedown and ended up winning round number three on two judges' scorecards, so... really goofy fight. Kyle Nelson at the end of the day walks away victorious. First win since March of 2024. And yeah, improves to 17-6. Big win in front of a Canadian crowd. But yeah, him versus Drew Dober next. They both just snapped a little losing spree. And I think Drew Dober, Kyle Nelson just writes itself. As for Matt Frivola, 3 straight losses. He also just hasn't really had the best run in the UFC. You know, he's gone 5-6 with a draw. I don't know. Might be time for Matt Frivola to call it. I generally don't know what else he could do. Maybe, I have nothing, guys. I really have nothing. So Matt Frivola can maybe fight someone coming off of the Contender Series. But other than that, I mean, Matt Frivola, his time is numbered in the UFC. That's for certain. Next up, one of my favorite finishes from the card. Charles Jourdain gets another guillotine choke on Davy Grant. Easily the biggest win in his career. Easily the biggest win of Charles Jourdain's career. And this is a man who holds a win over Cron Gracie, for goodness sakes. Holds a win over Duho Choi. This win over Davy Grant is massive for him. He is now on a 2-fight winning streak. Both of them guillotine chokes. Both of them performance bonuses. Great work. Utterly great work for Charles Jourdain here. You know, back and forth on the feet. 25-7 strikes to 9. Was looking good. Eventually, Davy Grant had him against the cage. Charles Jourdain just locks in a beautiful guillotine choke. Eventually gets him down to guard. It is super tight. Like, you can just see it. Like, he has arm over, arm under, just squeezing. Barely even had to hold it in. And Davy Grant taps. And Davy Grant is not easy to finish. I think there's something that Davy Grant's only been finished like 3 or 4 times in his career out of his 8 losses. And, you know, you got to make that 4 or 5 now because Charles Jourdain just got done in 3 minutes. So Davy Grant's little 2-fight winning streak does come to an end, but he turns 40 on December 18th. So I think we should find him an old school bantamweight to take on. I really do. I think we need to give him a legend for one more go. I don't really know who. If I'm being honest, I know Jourdain just beat Victor Henry. Victor Henry did pick up a win, though, following that. If Rene Yaha is still in the UFC, I know that guy's like 41. So I just want to send Davy Grant out with a bang, but his time is probably coming to an end in the UFC. And as for Jourdain, he's just getting going. 30 years old, not even 29 right now, and just picked up a massive win, 2 straight wins. People were saying maybe Bryce Mitchell for the next fight, and I like that. I like Bryce Mitchell versus Charles Jourdain at bantamweight. I really like that fight. So I don't see anything wrong with running that. Charles Jourdain versus Bryce Mitchell. Let's run it. And as for Davy Grant, let's try and find this guy in old school. We don't need to have him be fighting up-and-comers when he's almost 40. Let's do that next. With that, crazy. Just pandemonium. You know, I picked Manny Fiorot over Jasmine Jastavicius. You know, bit of a skeptical pick. But I just thought Manny Fiorot just took Valentina the distance. She's clearly good. She proceeds to knock out Jasmine Jastavicius in 1:14. She has never done anything close to that. Clips her with, I forgot if it was a straight or a jab, but Manon just hits her clean and Jasmine walks right into it. stumbles backwards, falls. Manafiora lands some ground and pound, and that's that. Manafiora, massive win here. The fact that they didn't give her a performance bonus is ridiculous, but great work. Great work, Manafiora. I mean, to be honest, I was impressed. I was really impressed, man, and I did not see it coming, especially from someone of how you usually fight. I mean, come on, to be honest, she got a title fight off of 5 straight decision wins. I just want to say that. No knockdowns out of any of those either. Last finish had been 2021 and 2020. Two finishes in 2021, both ground and pound. Here she is knocking out Jasmine Jess DeVicious. I mean, crazy. Wasn't even warranted as an official knockdown. Like, she hit her, and then later she just kind of stumbled and fell. But yeah, Manafiora, massive win. She's currently ranked at number 2, and I know Natalia Silva's on a bit of a run, but I mean, come on, Manafiora, you absolute dog. As for Jasmine DeVicious, 5-fight winning streak is snapped in front of her hometown crowd in Vancouver, Canada. Yeah, kind of rough. Falls to 14-4. I mean, it's a tough game. It really is. So she'll be ranked at number 5. I think she could take on Rose Namajunas next. If Tracy Cortez gets it done, I think Tracy Cortez has a fight coming up. But you could have her take on someone. Wang Kong could be a name. But Jasmine Jess DeVicious, you got to fight down now. And as for Manafiora, I mean, if Zhang Weili wins, I mean, I'd throw Manafiora's name in the hat. Her and Natalia Silva. I mean, you got to do something. But it was a great win for Manon. I know if Macy Barber wins her next fight, you could run Macy Barber versus Manafiora. So a lot of options there, but great win for Manon. And as for Jasmine, tough L in front of your hometown crowd. Next up, split decision in the men's bantamweight division as the number 9 ranked Amin Zahabi defeats the number 7th ranked Marlon Chito Vera. That's right, Marlon Vera loses and people are outraged. People are mad. People are saying he shouldn't have lost. But, you know, the Marlon Vera has always been on the bad side of things when he has low output. In this fight, he had low output. So round 1, Amin Zahabi and him just going back and forth, very casual. 20 significant strikes to 11. I think that gives round 1 to Amin Zahabi. Round 2, Marlon Vera drops Amin Zahabi, similar to how Aldo dropped him. This guy's knocked out cold. How is he surviving? Fights back. Actually outstrikes him at the end of the round, 24-21. And then round 3, Amin Zahabi had 37 significant strikes at 24, had so much way more output than Marlon Vera had, and output beat the damage. And that damage was just one knockdown in the second. So people are saying it felt like Marlon Vera won. I don't think so. I thought that Amin Zahabi had done enough, and this man's on a roll. This man has now won 7 straight, mind you, 4 straight decisions, 5 of the 7 wins by decision, but he's going to be ranked number 7. Come the rankings update, and he's got a lot of options. He really does. This man can call some shots now as he's beaten Jose Aldo and Marlon Vera in his last 2 fights. So being ranked at number 7, Devson Figueiredo just won, there's a fight. Song Yadong at 5, there's a fight. Corey Sanhagen at 4, I'm going to throw his name in as another fight, but that's it. Sanhagen, Yadong, Figueiredo, I like all of those fights right there for him. As for Marlon Vera, fighting down, brother, fighting down. I mean, Marlon Vera, 3 straight losses. He hasn't won since August of 2023 and is currently 1-4 since 2022. Yeah, Marlon Vera, who is only 32 years old. Like, we don't need to act like he's old at all. He isn't. Amin Zahabi was 5 years older than him at 37. But Marlon Vera, you know, he was ranked at number 7. I'm bumping him down to number 9. I think that if Peyton Talbot beats Henry Cejudo, Peyton Talbot could take on Marlon Vera. But I also think David Martinez at 11, Vinicius Oliveira at 12. You know, there's options there. We could even say Montel Jackson runs it with him. Like, he's going to be fighting someone in the bottom 15 or unranked, and it's just how it goes when you are on a losing streak. I mean, it hasn't been great to Marlon Vera these last few years. Co-main event was up next. Mike Mallett and Kevin Holland. And Mike Mallett is going to be ranked again in the rankings. He's going to take Kevin Holland's spot at 15 as he wins a very weird decision. I mean, this was a weird fight. It was a boring fight. 29-28 across the board. And at the end of the day, you know who lost? The fans. The fans freaking lost. But round 1 gets going, and Kevin Holland kind of takedown hungry. You know, Mike Mallett reversing, outstrikes him 12-9 significantly. Total strikes Kevin Holland 22-13. Things are kind of wonky. There's a lot of low blows from Mike Mallett to Kevin Holland. There were a good amount, and no points were taken at all. And then round 2, we get a really nasty one. A really nasty one, and the fight was never the same. No idea how they let Kevin Holland continue. I mean, this guy filled up the whole 5 minutes and then probably another 2 minutes. I mean, he was just not feeling it, and no point taken from Mike Mallett. You know, round three, Kevin Holland outstrikes him 20-11 significantly. Malik goes 1-2 on his takedown attempts to get 2 minutes of control time. I mean, he tried a submission with a, you know, kind of ended the fight on top. Almost got an arm triangle, but end of the day, just boring. Just really boring. And for Kevin Holland, you know, I know it's awesome. He had 5 fights this year. He wants to have 6, but take the year, rest of the year off, man. Kevin Holland, you know, is quietly gone from having a very good, you know, UFC record. I mean, remember that 5-0 2020? Well, since 2020, I mean, I want you guys all to know is that he has suffered 10 losses since 2020. In the year 2020, he only had 5 losses on his record. And since that incredible year, I mean, he has just quietly gone 7-10 with a no contest. And I mean, it's just, I think the strength of schedule is hard to keep up. I think that, you know, the Dana Rodriguez fight came back a little bit too quick from that. So I think we all know Kevin Holland, his next fight's going to be with Neil Magny. I think we can all see that. But I mean, I would run that in 2026. I don't think this guy needs to rush back at all. Now, as for Mike Mallett, this has now been a nice little win streak now. 3 straight wins since losing to Neil Magny in 2024. 2-0 in 2025, and now he's ranked at number 15. Now, I think him versus Dan Rodriguez at 13, Jeff Neal at 12, those are going to be his options. The highest I can give him, Gilbert Burns at 11. But I don't really know if that's going to be the case. We also have Gabriel Bonfim and Randy Brown. I can even see the winner or loser of that fighting Mike Mallett. He's going to be in the mix in the bottom 15, dare I even say an unranked contender, coming up next. But end of the day, whether it was good or bad, Mike Mallett walked away with the victory in a very weird fight. Now, the main event, the whole reason we tuned in, right? Rainer Dayritter, Brendan Allen, and somehow Brendan Allen on short notice defeats Rainer Dayritter by TKO. And you may be hearing that going, oh my gosh, he knocked him out. No, Rainer Dayritter quit on the stool heading into round 5. You can't even make it up. You can't even make it up. The guy who took it to Robert Whittaker gives up on the stool. No words. Really no words. I mean, this guy beat Robert Whittaker back in July and is now quitting on the stool to Brendan Allen. But Brendan Allen is going to go from being ranked number 9 to being ranked number 4 in the world. And I have a feeling Rainer Dayritter is going to drop all the way to number 7. That's where I think he's going to be going, if you ask me. Maybe even down to 8. We're going to bump everyone down. But Brendan Allen, now a top 5 fighter on the planet. How about that? Top 5 middleweight fighter on the planet. Corner stoppage, I think they actually called it. But totals from the fight, 22 significant strikes to 9 for Brendan Allen. 97 total strikes to 61 for Brendan Allen. Brendan Allen goes 1-1 on takedowns for 11 minutes and 39 seconds control time. Rainer Dayritter goes 3-7 on takedowns for 7 minutes of control time. Each man officially attempted 1 submission. But round 1, Rainer Dayritter takes him down, controls in 4 minutes. Could have been a 10-8. Really could have. Just domination. Round 2, Rainer goes for a takedown. Instead, kind of gets reversed by Brendan Allen. Brendan Allen winds up on top. Round 3, what is that? Rainer Dayritter going for a takedown, landing it, getting rolled. Brendan Allen, control time. Round 4, Rainer Dayritter, 0 significant strikes, is taken down in the first 4 seconds. Brendan Allen holds him down. Boring. Boring. I wasn't even actually watching it. I had it on my phone, and then I just took over with my buddy Jaden at the bar, and I'm like, dude, I think the guy in the main event just gave it and cut it, called it on the stool. And he was like, oh, that's lame. I'm like, you're right. That is lame. Rainer Dayritter gasses out after the first inning, the first period, whatever you want to call it, the first round. And he's done. Wow, Rainer Dayritter, after all that hard work, after taking out Kevin Holland, being the first man to beat Bo Nickel, defeating Robert Whittaker, loses to Brendan Allen. You can't make it up. And Brendan Allen started the year in February, losing to Anthony Hernandez. Before that, he had lost to Azniy Yovov. And then July, beats Marvin Vettori in a fight of the night. October, defeats Rainer Dayritter in a main event. Wow. Just wow. Now, what's your award, Brendan Allen? How about the number 1 ranked Driscus Duplessis? I think so. He ain't getting a title shot. You know, he's lost to Anthony Hernandez and Nazim, who are way more deserving than he is. But I think Driscus Duplessis is in need of an opponent, and that is what you may do. So, Nazim Yovov, ranked at number 2, should then fight for the belt. And number 3 ranked Sean Strickland should take on the number 6 ranked Anthony Hernandez. Now, where does that leave Rainer Dayritter? I have 3 options. 3 options. First one is Rolato Sonia, because why not? Could be a good win for Izzy. Number 2, Kyle Barallo. He also lost this year in a main event. They both need a win. And number 3, MVP. Michael Venom Page and Rainer Dayritter would be a weird, goofy fight and I'm all here for it. But yeah, like I said, this card was trying to sabotage itself with boring main event, weird co-main event, kind of boring, weird decision with bantamweight, according to some people, weird judging in the, not judging, weird, what you want to call it, officiating in the Kyle Nelson, Matt Frivola fight, but great finishes all around. Every finish on this card was awesome. They were either in round three or round one. Literally my favorite finishes, round three or round one finishes. You can't beat that. But yeah, UFC Vancouver, one of the better events of the year in terms of main event, not one of the better main events of the year. But fear not, because if you want good main events, tune into UFC 321 in Abu Dhabi as Tom Aspinall was back for the first time in a year and a half to take on Ciryl Gane, who's fighting for yet another championship. How does he do it? How does he do it? No one knows. Also, the vacant women's strawweight championship, Virna Jandidoa, Mackenzie Dern, a Brazilian, will hold the belt by end's night. Also, bantamweight division, Umar Nurmagomedov, Mario Bautista. Heavyweight division, Alexander Volkov, Halton Almeida. And Alexander Rakic is back to take on the undefeated light heavyweight, Azamat Mirzakhanov. Even these prelims, bangers up and down. Quinlan Sakyat is back for his third fight of the year. Ikram Alcacera finally back against Jun Sung Park. You also have Louis Sutherland, Walter Walker throwing it down at heavyweight. Hamdi Abdulhawam and Chris Barnett at heavyweight. Azad Maksum is back. Jacqueline O'Miram is back. Nathaniel Wynn, Jose Delgado. Featherweight fight on the prelims. That is going to be one of the best fights of the year. Mark my words. But yeah, guys. Next time I see you, we'll be talking about week 8, probably some new UFC fights, and hopefully I will have my insurance license by then. Actually, no, I won't. By Wednesday, I will have it. I'm going to get it tomorrow. I'm going to pass my exam. I'm literally going to upload this and then go study because I cannot fail again. Like, I can't lose this job before I even have it just because I can't pass a freaking exam. Life is crazy, guys. It really is. But yeah, let me know your guys' thoughts on week 7 of the NFL season, how you thought Vancouver went, and what you want for the future in the world. Tell me your dreams, your possibilities, everyone. Alrighty, I'm blabbering along, guys. What is going on in my life? As you know, I say it at the end of every episode. I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.